This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 87, Preventing Catheter-Associated UTIs in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello there and welcome back. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are your hosts for this episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. We have a very interesting, very medical-based, science, health-based episode for you today.
Yeah.
We're talking about not just UTIs, but a huge problem in nursing homes, which is catheter-associated UTIs. And as a guest, this is one of the ones where we can't do this by ourselves. We need someone with an advanced degree to help us. And this week, who do we have, Will?
We're very fortunate that we have Dr. Jennifer Meddings, MD. She is a physician, and she's an associate professor of internal medicine and pediatrics at the University of Michigan Health System. And she cares for hospitalized patients at the Ann Arbor VA Medical Center. Much of her recent research as a physician has focused on evaluation and development of evidence-based interventions for prevention of catheter-associated urinary tract infection. She has performed several systemic reviews involving interventions to reduce unnecessary catheter use, including meta-analyses demonstrating that the use of urinary catheter reminders and stop orders can actually reduce catheter-associated UTIs by greater than 50%, which is phenomenal for those of us that are familiar with catheters and the prevalence of UTIs in people that have to use them. Her work has informed the development and evaluation of educational interventions implemented in multiple national collaboratives to reduce catheter-associated UTIs in the acute care and long-term care settings. She has developed and led a project using the RAND UCLA appropriateness method to formally rate the appropriateness of three types of urinary catheters. The indwelling urinary catheters, normally known as Foley catheters, the straight caths, and the external catheters like the condom catheters. For hundreds of clinical scenarios commonly encountered in hospitalized adults on medical services. This work was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and her work has focused on evaluation of measures of urinary catheter use for surveillance and public reporting and the challenges in implementing value-based purchasing programs using metrics involving urinary catheter use and pressure ulcer development. In other words, we have somebody on here who is more than qualified to discuss what is probably one of the top five issues that we face with long-term care residents, which are urinary tract infections and catheter use. All right, Jennifer, well, thanks for joining us today. And one of the reasons that we have you on is that I know and our listeners know, because they have loved ones in nursing homes, that a lot of residents have catheters. What are some of the reasons, first of all, that nursing home residents have catheters in?
Well, actually, there's a couple of different reasons why catheters get placed in patients who are in nursing homes. And the most important thing to know is that the family member should always know and ask, why is it in use?
Gotcha.
Years ago, unfortunately, this is not as common these days because nursing homes have actually made great strides in reducing catheter use, and actually better strides in that than our acute care hospitals have. So in the past, they were commonly used for patients who had urinary incontinence. And I think many times they were well-intended use because it was thought to increase the dignity of the patient to have their bladder emptied by a catheter rather than sort of an adult incontinence garment or having to change their bed frequently. But we know now that with experience over the years that there's actually a lot of better products for trying to manage urinary incontinence, and it actually should be the rare patient that has a catheter in place just to manage urinary incontinence.
And just so that people understand, because I think some people may not realize what a catheter is, We're talking about indwelling catheters. So the type of catheter that goes up and it goes into the bladder, is that right?
So there's actually a couple of different types of catheters that I can just quickly review because
sure.
it's important for family members to actually know the different options.
Yeah.
So the most common thing that people think of when they say a patient has a bladder catheter or a bladder tube is a catheter that is sort of commonly known for years as a Foley catheter.
Right.
And that is a catheter that basically is a tube that actually goes through the outside opening where people urinate.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into the bladder and it actually sits there and constantly drains the urine from the bladder. So it essentially, its purpose is primarily to keep that bladder empty. Okay, so that is the indwelling catheter, and that is used in both men and women.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other types of catheters that are commonly used and really good to know about as alternatives. So in particular, there is something called a condom catheter or an external catheter that is used pretty frequently in men.
Right.
It is a catheter that is a tube that actually is basically the tube is connected to a bag just like that Foley catheter, but instead of actually being inserted into that tube that empties the bladder, it basically externally is sort of attached to the man's penis
mm-hmm.
to basically just collect the urine, and it basically looks like a condom.
Right.
Okay? And that's why they call it a condom cath. And that actually catheter is safer in many respects for men who actually need it for purposes such as collecting routine urine if they have severe incontinence, because it actually doesn't enter the bladder. And it's there's been several studies showing that it's much more comfortable for men than the catheters that go inside. There is a couple of newer products that are available for women that actually also function as an external catheter that have really come on the market really just in the past couple of years. They are not called condom catheters in women. There was condom catheters in the past, but they just were kind of hard to attach.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But they did try. They tried using female condoms to do that. But they actually do have a couple of different products that really serve more like a wicking or absorption function.
Sure.
But they primarily work for women that really don't move much in bed.
And so
there actually are both sort of non-invasive options to address urine and in both men and women, and it's important for family members in nursing homes to know about them. And then the other most common catheter is one that actually is not indwelling. They actually call it an ISD, which stands for an intermittent straight cath, and in other parts of the country it's known as an in-and-out catheter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the patient has a catheter placed, either the patient places it themselves, which actually can happen in some settings. They do this at home.
Sure.
Or actually by a nurse where they actually sort of routinely empty that bladder either when they have symptoms or on a scheduled basis. And that basically that catheter goes in only for the few seconds that's required to empty the bladder. And then the catheter comes out. And so that actually has several advantages for the patient because, number one, that plastic is not constantly in the bladder, so it's not getting coated with materials that pose it, increase its risk for infection. But it also gives that patient more dignity because they don't have a bag and a tube stuck to them all the time.
Right. And, and these are the kinds that, you know, paraplegics or
yeah.
somebody that has some sort of issue like that may use it at home to empty their bladder, right?
Yeah. So intermittent catheters, although they probably have the most experience in the past for patients who did have spinal cord injuries, and that's mm-hmm. because with spinal cord injury, that bladder has a nerve injury and just cannot, you know, the muscles to sort of compress that bladder to empty. It's actually very commonly used in our older population in both men who have prostate issues,
mm-hmm.
Because that prostate, as it gets enlarged, is basically an obstruction to that bladder emptying. And so some men actually have done this for years. They empty their bladder using an intermittent straight cath, and it actually prevents their kidneys from getting damaged
from
that prostate issue. And women actually do use it also. There are some women who actually have neurologic conditions mm-hmm. besides spinal cord injury, like multiple sclerosis. Happens in both men and women, and those patients often require using intermittent straight cath on a regular basis. And women also sometimes need it because of sort of anatomic changes that have happened as they get older, like pelvic floor prolapse issues.
So what is a UTI? We're going to be talking about catheter-associated UTIs, but in general, what is a UTI?
So a urinary tract infection, the most important thing to know about it is it's basically a combination. You have to have both symptoms of a urinary tract infection and a positive urine test supporting infection. And this is important because years ago, and actually not in some facilities, it's actually still not uncommon, is that they would diagnose a UTI just based upon a positive urine test without associating it with symptoms. And this is really important because our older patient population, particularly those that women who are after menopause because of hormonal changes that happen, men, particularly with prostate issues and patients with diabetes, they commonly carry bacteria in their urine that will yield a positive urine test, even though they actually do not have a clinical infection and have no symptoms. So if you're treating what we call a urinary tract infection that clinically requires that risk of antibiotics, you actually need to have both symptoms of an infection and a positive test.
And just from a general perspective, it's bacteria in the urethra? Is it in the bladder? How does it work?
So the basically a urinary tract infection, the most common place is it's basically bacteria that is in the fluid that the bladder is holding. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then that fluid basically empties through the opening to the outside, which is known as the urethra. That is what we call cystitis, which is a lower urinary tract infection. It can be severe and actually sort of go up that tube from the bladder to the kidneys, and actually that would cause a kidney infection. And so you can have both upper urinary tract infections, which involves the kidney, and lower ones, which are more common involving the bladder.
So it sounds like, you know, I think that even most of us that don't have medical knowledge could figure out that when you've got a tube that goes from the outside world into your body, there's a chance for bacteria to get in. What are the best practices available to prevent these catheter associated
UTIs? The meeting of the two worlds.
Yeah.
Sure. So actually, when we have taught hospitals and caregivers at both hospitals and nursing homes how to do this, we actually think about what we call disrupting that life cycle of the urinary catheter to try to organize our different preventive strategies. And step zero is actually we think of a stop sign, which basically means number one, the most important strategy is to avoid placing the catheter in the first place.
Gotcha.
And that is because once that piece of plastic is in the bladder, it is incredibly hard to prevent that catheter collecting bacteria and eventually becoming infected. And so particularly they've done these studies where patients, if they have a catheter in and you actually check them every day, their urine, if they have actually acquired bacteria, the risk actually goes up by about 5% every day. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine if that patient has had a catheter for 1 to 2 weeks, their risk is actually very high. We currently do not have a urinary catheter device yet that basically is resistant to infection. They have, unlike some of our, we actually have vascular or bloodstream catheters that actually do work pretty well. They're not perfect, but they do work better. But the urinary tract, we don't actually have any great solutions yet. They've actually tried a lot of different what they call antimicrobial catheters that are coated with either antibiotics or other materials that are supposed to make them resistant to urinary tract infections. But unfortunately, mm-hmm. the larger studies, when they've actually studied them very objectively, they actually don't work that well. So your best protection still is to avoid that catheter in the first place. But yeah. Once you've decided you really need it, there's really important things to do. So step one is making sure that, number one, you are actually inserting that catheter using the best sterile technique.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually very clear instructions that come from the manufacturers and also from the CDC, the Centers for Disease Prevention, with guidelines for how to do this. And this includes, they've made a lot of progress in recent years putting all the materials for that catheter placement in a kit with basically instructions that really help people do it more intuitively the correct time, the first time through.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it also helps, particularly in women, if they have another person to help them place that catheter. Because one of the problems that can happen that unfortunately is very common, particularly in women and in patients that are heavier, is that that catheter tip can get contaminated. Even though it's sterile when it comes out of that package, it's easy that it can touch something like the thigh or something on the bed or something accidentally, very briefly before it gets in. And so there's also using these catheters that are actually what they call closed systems, and this is actually now the standard throughout the country. It wasn't probably a decade ago, but it actually helps keep that system sealed. And then actually securing the device, which means sort of they have special anchors to the skin that are adhesive that actually keep it from moving, because the more it moves in and out of that catheter, the more irritating it is. Is in, the next thing we think about is step two, is how do we maintain that catheter from getting infected once it's already in? Mm-hmm. And again, the most important step is actually has to do with, number one, somebody has to be thinking about that catheter every day to keep asking, does it still need to be in? Okay. Because if you have a catheter that's in, the most important thing to do with that catheter is, the number one, know why it was placed in the first place and figure out if it can come out. There are also some special care instructions to try to keep that catheter from getting infected once it's already in. Number one, and this is important for family to know, it's actually important for that the bag that collects the urine to actually be lower than that patient's bladder, so that you actually don't get the urine flowing up back into the bladder. This is actually really important because when patients get transported, say from their room to physical therapy or their room to, you know, the car to visit family or something like that, sometimes we will see people accidentally, and they think they're doing something, you know, well-intentioned to keep it off the, you know, ground or something, they'll actually hang that urine catheter bag up. And when they do that, it actually increases that patient's risk of infection and bladder trauma. So be very careful not to change the position of that bag above that bladder, if at all possible. The other thing is to make sure that everybody is using very clean hands and gloves when they're touching that catheter, so that when they empty the catheter, they're draining it into a container that is not being shared between patients.
Is it common, Jennifer, to manipulate the catheter without using gloves? Or, I mean, is it standard to either wash the hands and then use bare hands, or you have to use gloves every time?
I can't imagine anyone in a nursing home using bare hands.
So the standard is, of course, to wash your hands and use gloves. The reason I bring it up is that sometimes patients have been home with catheters, and they were used to doing things more informal, and we have occasionally seen, you know, very well-meaning family members and visitors come in, they see that catheter bag is full, and so they try to help out by emptying it themselves while they're visiting, and they really shouldn't do that. They should always make sure the healthcare worker is emptying it and using this very clean process, particularly when you're in a nursing home, because unlike when you're at home, I mean, the home's not sterile, but it certainly carries less risk of having some dangerous bacteria in the environment that could get on that catheter than when you're in the nursing home setting. So that's also incredibly important. And then basically just doing routine daily, you know, skincare around that catheter. They've actually shown that using sort of rigorous, you know, very strong antimicrobial cleaners around that catheter actually seems to increase the risk of infection rather than prevent it, probably because it makes the skin more fragile. So just routine soap and water is just fine. And then the very third step that is most important is what we call prompting removal. So there should always be a plan that everybody knows. Either this is a catheter that is only in for a day or two until a certain problem, you know, fixes, or they get some, you know, the urologist comes to see patient or something like that. Or if it is a chronic catheter, there needs to be a reason. Everybody knows why that is, why the other strategies that have been tried and failed. And then what is the plan for the catheter long term? So particularly one important thing to know is that in many nursing homes around the world, and actually an effective intervention that they have found when patients get transferred from the hospital to the nursing home, is that if the patient comes with a catheter and nobody knows why that catheter was placed, actually just doing a trial without it. Just take it out and see what happens, because otherwise people are just they'll just keep it in forever, and that patient will inevitably get an infection and complication.
And if you do have a chronic catheter, does it need to come out? Do you need to change it at a certain interval?
So this is actually a very common question that we get. So I can, is there literature that actually shows that in the routine patient who does not have certain problems I'll talk about in a bit, that you should change it on a regular interval? And actually, there is not literature supporting that. And if anything, there's actually studies that actually show when you routinely change the catheter on a schedule, such as every week, every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, without a clear, you know, reason for that, like a problem you were trying to fix with that, you actually increase the risk of infection and trauma to that area because you're basically pulling in and pulling out plastic. I can tell you that it is a common practice that we see in the community that patients who have chronic catheters sometimes actually get them changed routinely every 28 days. And we've actually asked a lot about this. I actually asked quite a lot about this because we will commonly see this in patients whose catheters are managed by urology. There are a few patients where something like that may be clinically indicated, and these are patients that we call catheter blockers. There are some patients that simply because of their anatomy, the types of chemicals in their urine, their genetics, et cetera, that they, if they have that catheter more than 2 weeks or 4 weeks or something like that, the catheter actually gets blocked with sort of like crusty material. And in those types of patients, a very specific type we call a catheter blocking patient, they actually do need it changed on a more routine basis to basically avoid the catheter getting blocked. Because when it as soon as it blocks, and it might block in the middle of the night or something like that, then their bladder will start to fill up and they can get complications. But the patient who is not a catheter blocker, the catheter really doesn't need to be changed for clinical reasons. We will tell you that we've heard, I've asked about this, why do people do this? And there has been, we hear that, oh, well, many physicians do it because the Foley catheter was technically only FDA approved as a temporary device by the FDA, meaning that it was approved for like either 28 days or 38 days of use. And so some people change it because they're afraid of getting in trouble for using a device beyond its FDA indication. But it was not really studied in that manner. And actually, that was years ago. And we actually think that this should probably be reassessed. And there are patients who have catheters for a very long time without it being changed that actually do quite fine. There is one other indication where you should probably change the catheter on a routine, not really routine, but on a special basis. And this is the patient that actually has had a chronic catheter. And you actually do suspect they have a catheter-associated infection, but say that catheter has been in for 2 weeks or more. Okay. In the patient who's had that catheter in for 2 weeks or more, the recommendation from the CDC is actually to change out that catheter and then allow the patient to, so take the old catheter out, put a new catheter in, and then allow the patient's urine to collect in the new catheter so that your urine sample is not as likely contaminated with that previous catheter that has basically collected what we call biofilm. And so the reason it is so that your diagnostic test is likely a better result in a patient who's had that chronic catheter. But if you're not looking for, if you're not suspecting infection and your patient's not a chronic catheter blocker, there really is no strong clinical need to change it on a routine basis, and you're likely doing more harm than good.
Now, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but how serious can UTIs be?
So UTIs can actually be quite serious, particularly in our elderly population, because in general, our geriatric patients, number one, because they're older and frail, they tend to have weakened immune systems. And so what might be a simple urinary tract infection in, say, a 25-year-old healthy woman, that could be treated with a couple of days of antibiotics and then, not need to go to the hospital or ER or anything like that. The older patient, number one, because they're in a healthcare facility, that bug that they get, the bacteria that they get, may not be a simple to treat bacteria. It actually might be a drug resistant bacteria because it was acquired in a healthcare facility, whether it be a long-term care facility or a hospital. So they're more likely to get a dangerous bacteria than, say, if they had gotten a UTI at home. The other thing is they are much more likely to have that bacteria spread from their bladder up to their kidney or into their bloodstream and get what we call septic, which means it could affect their, they could get fevers from it, they can get low blood pressure from it, they can get kidney failure from it, organ failure from it, and actually there is a risk of mortality with that. So it actually can be quite dangerous for our older folks. But another thing I would like to bring up, the other reason that we worry a lot about catheter-associated UTIs in our older patients is that we actually worry that our healthcare providers may think the patient has a catheter-associated UTI, check a urine because either they have a fever or confusion or something like that, check the urine, they get a positive test supporting they have bacteria in the urine, and then they diagnose that patient and treat the patient for catheter-associated UTI without really thinking of the other things that could be causing that geriatric patient's symptoms. And so we actually worry a lot about catheter-associated UTI diagnoses actually being incorrect and actually being a distractor for what might be the real problem, such as pneumonia or bowel obstruction or stroke, making that patient confused. So we actually think it's really important to be really sure, number one, do you really think that patient has a UTI, or are there other important things that actually can be more dangerous that you're not thinking about? Don't just look only for the UTI because it's so common. Convince yourself it has it just because they have a test result without doing a more thorough physical exam and thinking about other things, because you actually could miss a pneumonia or a stroke or hypoglycemia or something like that that could be causing the symptoms.
I got you, doctor. And it seems like that is something that could easily happen because, as you said before, you're not only testing, but you're looking for symptoms. So there could be a positive test, but the symptoms might be from something else.
That's right. So, for example, we bring this up in particularly because one thing that's important to know about nursing homes as opposed to hospitals is that in many nursing homes, they actually don't function like a hospital. So they do not have a physician that is, you know, on site 24 hours a day. And so often it's a matter of communications between the family about their concerns, the nurses that are there, and a physician who may not always be on site because they're actually covering multiple nursing homes. And so it's important for, say, if a family member has something, a symptom that's going on, like confusion is actually a very common problem that happens, or decreased appetite or something like that, or fever. That it's not the only test people send. They actually have to really do a good physical exam and think what else could be causing it. And probably, I think, one of the most important things for family members to know is that if you're, number one, don't insist that, because this is another thing that we hear about, is that the patient had a urinary tract sample sent because family members or friends, you know, insisted upon it being sent. Without really having a discussion with that family about why are you worried about UTI? You know, what did you notice that's different in your family member? And actually thinking about and explaining why maybe this patient needs a chest x-ray, rather than, you know, a urine test. I'm just sort this out, because we know that once those healthcare providers see that positive urine test result, it can be an important, distractor, because then they may forget to think, oh, well, did that patient have cough, or has anybody listened to that patient's, lungs. So if they think catheter-associated UTI, usually the next question is, so why are you convinced it's not something else? Because usually that something else is something that's probably more serious than a catheter-associated UTI.
Gotcha. That's good advice. It sounds like at the end of the day, one of the most important questions that families of nursing home residents can ask is, why is this catheter in there?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So why is this catheter, and you know, can they live without it? Because at the end of the day, if you can not have a catheter, I would imagine you're a lot less likely to develop a UTI.
Exactly. So these are, some of these patients, the other thing is many of them are actually sort of at increased risk for UTIs even without devices. Uh-huh. So when you put a device in, their risk is just, even much higher. So there's a couple things to think about. And it's sort of a balancing act, because on the one hand, we understand we think in many ways well-intended over the years, is that people will put these catheters, in these frail patients because we want to keep their skin dry. We're trying to protect their skin from getting, you know, a rash or breakdown. It's a dignity issue. We don't want them to have a wet bed, things like that. But at the same time, unfortunately, we also know sometimes they're placed because it's more convenient for staff to take care of a patient who has a catheter rather than having to change their incontinence garments and beds. And so you have to, you know, balance that and make sure that it's really for the good of the patient that the catheter is in place and not really for convenience of either the family members or the staff.
Well, that's fantastic information, Dr. Metting. So we really appreciate you coming on the show to share this. I mean, like just basic information about what UTIs are, you know, how catheter-associated UTIs are different from regular UTIs. And all that information is very valuable for our listeners. And our listeners are mostly made up of family members of nursing home residents. And UTIs are a constant problem and a constant dilemma. And the more information that they are armed with, the better off they are and the better off the health of the resident is.
And I think it was really interesting as somebody that used to work in a nursing home and has dealt with healthcare in the past throughout my life. I thought it was really interesting that there's no supporting literature that you need to change these out. Because I know at the nursing homes, we just assume that's what you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
We never asked. I just thought they were supposed to, you were supposed to change them out like you would change a bandage or something. But it makes a lot of sense what you're saying.
Right. And it could have been, you know, when these initial recommendations or at least habits developed. I mean, catheters were different then. They weren't all closed.
Yeah.
So they were at higher risk for developing infections. I mean, I think in many ways it was well-intended. People were trying to prevent infections. But the other thing that we actually only are more recently starting to appreciate, and actually our research is actually now focusing a lot on this now, is that everybody in the past is primarily focused on that risk of infection from the catheter. But probably something that we think actually happens probably more frequently and probably can be more serious is actually trauma to that urethra, the bladder entrance, from placing and removing these catheters. And so that's why now we think of, you know, even when we're talking about routine changes and things like that, because is it really like, I mean, yes, you might have less biofilm on that catheter when you change it out to a fresh one, but you're actually now traumatizing that urinary tract infection again, I mean, urinary tract again. And so every time you irritate that lining, which we call mucosa, you have these microscopic breaks in the tissue. And whenever you have little, it's almost like little scratches in that tissue, which are openings for bacteria. So trauma is actually a risk factor for getting infection. And so that's why now we even focus on, is it really the infection or is it really what can we do to prevent repeated trauma to that urinary tract?
That makes perfect sense. Again, we really appreciate the research you've been doing. You're on the forefront of this. And I mean, like, that's excellent information. And again, like, I want to reiterate what Will said. I mean, like, that's just a super misconception that you got to change that catheter, get new clean catheter in there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, and unfortunately, right. You said, I mean, these UTIs can be deadly. Yeah. And it's, you know, anything we can do to protect our elderly is good. Dr. Mettings, we really appreciate you being on here. We really appreciate all the work that you do. And, you know, we hope to keep the line open with you at some point. If we ever have any questions, you're definitely our go-to person.
Sure. And there is one more point that I think is important for families to know. And this is also something that we're trying to educate even healthcare providers about, is that it is very important for patients and family members and, you know, the bedside nurse and the physicians to remember that the in the past, patients were thought to have urinary tract infections when they had something like a change in color in the urine, you know, it suddenly became dark, change in odor or smell of that urine, or the urine became cloudy. Okay. And that's actually, research has shown in the past that there's also a change in color, change in odor, or change in cloudiness that often prompted either the family, the patient, or the bedside nurse to call the doctor and say, I sent a urine test because I think this patient has a UTI. And it's actually really important to know that those are not clinical symptoms of a urinary tract infection. There's a lot of different things that actually cause changes in color, changes in odor, and changes in cloudiness. And these are actually things like medication. A lot of our medications affect color, odor, and cloudiness, how well hydrated they are, and even the types of foods they eat, like certain types of vegetables cause a change in odor. And so really, if you're concerned about, like, for example, if a family member is concerned about a UTI. That's why it's always important to think, why are you concerned? And if they mention, oh, well, their urine now looks, you know, a slightly different color, or it's a little cloudy compared to yesterday, it's actually the important job of the healthcare provider to say, I hear you. I understand your concern, but let me share with you some new information that we've been given by our infection experts, is that that is no longer considered a sign of infection. And so you're really looking for more things like, you know, pain over their kidneys, chills, fevers, things like that. But don't get too excited over a simple change in appearance. Now, if they suddenly started having blood in their urine, there's a lot of different things that can cause that. Sometimes that's infection. But if it's really just a change in color or odor, don't be led down that path of thinking it's infection, because that will quickly lead down to that patient getting antibiotics that they usually don't need and can get complications from, like C. difficile diarrhea, which is very morbid to our older patients.
Absolutely. All right. Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Meddings.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Dr. Meddings. Talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, you can certainly say that Dr. Meddings has done her homework.
Yeah. And that was really interesting because I know that and she had mentioned that things have changed and the perspective has changed over the course of the years. But I know that when I was, you know, in the trenches in the nursing homes, it was a common, and I see now, ignorant perspective that many of us had, that, hey, you know, if somebody's going to have a Foley catheter, then it has to be at least changed every, you know, 28 days or something. But what she said makes perfect sense. When you pull a catheter out, or when you put one in, which, let me tell you, as somebody that has had it done, is the least comfortable thing that you can experience as a man. It is extremely uncomfortable, not painful, uncomfortable. But having that process done over and over again leaves slight tears in the urethra, which exposes the urethra and the tract itself to infections. So that was interesting. And I honestly think we could probably have a couple more episodes on UTIs and catheters. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah, and I agree. And that actually puts a good period on this episode.
Yeah. Is that a segue into the fact that it is National Punctuation Day?
It is.
I thought so.
You picked up what I was throwing down.
It's, yeah.
September 24th is National Punctuation Day, and I guess that deserves its own holiday. I wonder if that includes emojis.
Oh, that's a good
question. Well, is an emoji technically a punctuation?
No, like, it's not a punctuation. Like, so, no, it doesn't include emojis.
Okay. So, emojis, then, we need to figure out what emoji day is.
There needs to be a National Emoji Day. Yeah,
which I'm sure there is.
Winky face.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Well, great. With that, no. How do we get the podcast? You can get the podcast every Monday as it is delivered to you, piping fresh out the oven, via Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get your podcast from. Mm-hmm. Or you can watch the episodes. You can watch the episodes at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or on our YouTube channel. We recommend that you do both often, every day. Watch, listen, back and forth. It's a good time. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.